2. The world beneath the water was warm and still. Rye stayed under as long as he could, until his head swam and his pulse thudded and his chest began to ache. And then, and only then, he surfaced, filling his lungs with air. He loved the royal baths, had spent many languorous afternoons, evenings, mornings in them, but rarely alone. He was used to the laughter of boisterous company echoing off the stones, the playful embrace of a companion, kisses splashing on skin. But today the baths were silent, save for the gentle drip of water. His guards stood on either side of the door, and a pair of attendants perched, waiting with pitchers of soap and oil, brushes, robes, and towels, while Rye strode through the waist-high water of the basin. It took up half the room, a wide, deep pool of polished black rock, its edges trimmed in glass and gold. Light danced across the arched ceilings and the outer wall, broken only by high, thin windows filled with colored glass. The water around him was still sloshing from his ascent, and he splayed his fingers across the surface, waiting for the ripples to smooth again. It was a game he used to play when he was young, trying to see if he could still the surface of the water. Not with magic, just with patience. Growing up, he'd been even worse at waiting than he was at summoning elements. But these days, he was getting better. He stood in the very center of the bath and slowed his breathing, watched the water go still and smooth as glass. Soon his reflection resolved in its surface, mirror clear, and Rye considered his black hair and amber eyes before his gaze invariably drifted down over his brown shoulders to the mark on his chest. The circles wound together in a way that was both intuitive and foreign, a symbol of death and life. He focused and became aware of the pulse in his ears, the echo of Kell's own, both beats growing louder and louder, until Rye expected the sound to ruin the glassy stillness of the water. A subtle aura of peace broke the mounting pulse.
"Your Highness," said Vis from his place at the door, "you have a—"
"Let him pass," said the prince, his back to the guard.
He closed his eyes and listened to the hushed tread of bare feet, the whisper of robes against stone. Quiet, and yet loud enough to drown out his brother's heart.
"Good afternoon, Prince Rye." The omniscient's voice was a low thrum, softer than the king's, but just as strong, sonorous.
Rye turned in a slow circle to face the priest, a smile alighting on his face.
"Tyrion, what a pleasant surprise."
The head priest of the London Sanctuary was not a large man, but his white robes hardly swallowed him. If anything, he grew to fill them, the fabric swishing faintly around him, even when he stood still. The air in the room changed with his presence, a calm settling over everything like snow, which was good, because it counteracted the visible discomfort most seemed to feel around the man himself, shying away as if Tyrion could see through them, straight past skin and bone to thought and want and soul. Which was probably why Vis was now studying his boots. The Avanesson was an intimidating figure to most, much like Kell, Rye supposed, but to him, Master Serenz had always been Tyrion.
"If this is a bad time," the priest began, folding his hands into his sleeves.
"Not at all,"
said Rye, ascending the glass stairs that lined the bath on every side. He could feel the eyes in the room drift to his chest, not only the symbol seared into the bronze skin, but the scar between his ribs, where his knife, Astrid's knife, had gone in. But before the cool air could settle, or the eyes could linger, an attendant was there, draping him in a plush red robe.
"Please leave us," he said, addressing the rest of the room.
The attendants instantly began to withdraw, but the guard lingered.
"You too, Vis."
"Prince Rye," he began, "I'm not supposed to—"
"It's all right," said Rye drolly. "I don't think the Avanesson means me any harm."
Tyrann's silver brows inched up a fraction.
"That remains to be seen," said the priest evenly.
Vis was halfway through a step back, but stopped again at the words. Rye sighed. Ever since the Black Knight, the royal guards had been given strict instructions when it came to their kingdom's heir, and its Antari. He didn't know the exact words his father had used, but he was fairly sure they included "don't let them," and "out of your sight," and possibly "on pain of death."
"Vis," he said slowly, trying to summon a semblance of his father's stony command, "you insult me, and the head priest, with your enduring presence. There is one door in and out of this room. Stand on the other side with Tolnus, and guard it."
The impression must have been convincing, because Vis nodded and reluctantly withdrew. Tyrann lowered himself onto a broad stone bench against the wall, his white robes pooling around him, and Rye came to sit beside him, slumping back against the stones.
"Not much humor in this bunch," said Tyrann when they were alone.
"None at all," complained Rye, rolling his shoulders. "I swear, sincerity is its own form of punishment."
"The tournament preparations are coming along?"
"Indeed," said Rye. "The arenas are almost ready, and the Empire tents are positively decadent. I almost envy the magicians."
"Please tell me you're not thinking of competing, too.
After all the trouble Kel went to keep me alive, that would be sore thanks."
The smallest frown formed between Tyrann's eyes. On anyone else, it would have been imperceptible. But on the Avanessen's calm face, it registered as discontent, though he claimed that Kel and Rye were the only ones who managed to draw out that particular forehead crease.
"Speaking of Kel," said Rye.
Tyrann's gaze sharpened.
"Have you reconsidered?"
"Did you really think I would?"
"A man can hope."
Rye shook his head.
"Anything we should be worried about?"
"Besides your foolish plans, I don't believe so."
"And the helmet?"
"It will be ready."
The Avanessen closed his eyes.
"I'm getting too old for subterfuge."
"He needs this, Tyrann,"
pressed Rye, and then, with a coy smile,
"How old are you?"
"Old enough," answered Tyrann.
"Why?"
One eye opened.
"Are my gray hairs showing?"
Rye smiled. Tyrann's head had been silver for as long as he could remember. Rye loved the old man, and he suspected that, against Tyrann's better judgment, he loved Rye, too. As the Avanessen, he was the protector of the city, a gifted healer, and a very close friend to the crown. He'd mentored Kel as he came into his powers, and nursed Rye back to health whenever he was sick, or when he'd done something foolish and didn't want to get caught. He and Kel had certainly kept the old man busy over the years.
"You know," said Tyrann slowly, "you really should be more careful about who sees your mark."
Rye flashed him a look of mock affront.
"You can't expect me to remain clothed all the time, Master Tyrann."
"I do suppose that would be too much to ask."
Rye tipped his head back against the stones.
"People assume it's just a scar from that night," he said, "which is exactly what it is. And as long as Kel remains clothed, which, let's be honest, is a much easier demand, no one will realize it's anything more."
Tyrann sighed, his universal signal for discontent. The truth was that the mark unsettled Rye, more than he wanted to admit, and hiding it only made it feel more like a curse. And strangely, it was all he had. Looking down at his arms, his chest, Rye saw that aside from the silvery burst of spell work and the knife wound that looked so small and pale beneath, he bore very few scars. The seal wasn't pleasant, but it was a scar he'd earned, and one he needed to live with.
"People whisper," observed Tyrann.
"If I make a point of hiding it any more than I do, they will just whisper more."
"What would have happened?" wondered Rye. If I had gone to Tirin with my fears of weakness instead of accepting Holland's gift for strength, would the priest have known what to say? How to help?
Rai had confessed to Tirin in the weeks after the incident, told him about accepting the talisman, the possession charm, expecting one of the old man's reprimands. Instead, Tirin had listened, speaking only when Rai was out of words.
"Strength and weakness are tangled things," the Avanesson had said. "They look so much alike, we often confuse them, the way we confuse magic and power."
Rai had found the response flip, but in the months that followed, Tirin had been there at Rai's side, a reminder and a support. When he looked over at Tirin now, the man was staring at the water, past it, as if he could see something there, reflected in the surface or the steam. Maybe Rai could learn to do that. Scry. But Tirin had told him once it wasn't so much about looking out as looking in, and Rai wasn't sure he wanted to spend any more time than necessary doing that. Still, he couldn't shake the feeling, the hope, that everyone was born with the ability to do something, that if he just searched hard enough, he would find it. His gift. His purpose.
"Well," said Rai, breaking the silence, "do you find the waters to your liking?"
"Why won't you leave me in peace?"
"There's much to do,"
Tirin sighed.
"As it seems, you will not be dissuaded."
He drew a scroll from the folded sleeves of his robes.
"The final list of competitors."
Rai straightened and took the paper.
"It will be posted in the next day or two," explained the priest, "once we receive the lists from Pharaoh and Vesk. But I thought you'd want to see it first."
There was something in his tone, a gentle caution, and Rai undid the ribbon and uncoiled the scroll with nervous fingers, unsure of what he'd find. As the city's Avanesson, it was Master Tirin's task to select the 12 representatives of Arnes. Rai scanned the list, his attention first landing on Kamarov Lost. He felt a thrill at seeing the name, an invention, a fiction made real, before a name farther down snagged his gaze, a thorn hidden among roses. Alucard Emery. Rai winced, recoiled, but not before the name drew blood.
"How?"
he asked, his voice low, almost hollow.
"Apparently," said Tirin, "you're not the only one capable of pulling strings. And before you get upset, you should know that Emery broke far fewer rules than you have. In fact, he technically broke none. He auditioned for me in the fall when the spire was docked, and as far as I'm concerned, he's the strongest one in the ranks. 2 weeks ago, his sister came to me, to refresh my memory and to petition his place, though I think she simply wants him to come home. If that's not enough, there's the matter of the loophole."
Rai tried to keep himself from crumpling the paper.
"What loophole?"
"Emery was formally invited to compete 3 years ago, but..."
Tirin hesitated, looking uncomfortable.
"Well, we both know that certain circumstances prevented that. He's entitled to a spot."
Rai wanted to climb back into the bath and vanish beneath the water. Instead, he slowly, methodically rolled the paper up and retied it with string.
"And here I thought you might be happy," said Tirin. "The mystery and madness of youth is clearly lost on me."
Rai folded forward, rubbing his neck and then his shoulder. His fingers found the scar over his heart, and he traced the lines absently. A recent habit. The skin was silvery and smooth, just barely raised. But he knew that the seal went all the way through, flesh and bone and soul.
"Let me see,"
said Tirin, standing. Rai was grateful for the change of focus. He tipped his head out of the way and let the man examine his shoulder, pressing one cool, dry hand to the front and one to the back. Rai felt a strange warmth spreading through him along the lines of the spell.
Has the bond weakened?
Rye shook his head.
If anything, it seems to be growing stronger. At first, the echoes were dull, but now, it's not just pain either, Tyrion. Pleasure, fatigue, but also anger, restlessness. Like right now, if I clear my head, I can feel Kel's...
He hesitated, reaching for his brother.
Weariness. It's exhausting.
That makes sense, said Tyrion, hands falling away. This isn't simply a physical bond. You and Kel are sharing a life force.
You mean I'm sharing his, corrected Rye.
His own life had been cut off by the dagger driven into his chest. What he had, he was siphoning off Kel. The heat of the bath had vanished, and Rye was left feeling tired and cold.
Self-pity is not a good look on you, Your Highness, said Tyrion, shuffling toward the door. Thank you,
Rye called after him, holding up the scroll.
For this.
Tyrion said nothing, only crinkled his brow faintly, there it was again, that line, and vanished. Rye sank back against the bench and considered the list again, Kamarov's name so close to Alucard's. One thing was certain. It was going to be one hell of a tournament.